Nehmen wir eine kleine Hühnerei. Nun das Wetter.
Oh, ist das lecker.
Küchenfunk.
Herzlich willkommen zu einer neuen Folge vom Küchenfunk. Wir müssten jetzt in Folge 18 sein und ich habe euch dieses Mal was ganz Spezielles mitgebracht. Und zwar bin ich letzte Woche in Schottland gewesen bei der Glenmorangie Distillerie. Die haben mich nämlich eingeladen, um einen 1963er Whisky zu probieren. Und währenddessen durfte ich mir noch die Destillerie anschauen und in dem Glenmorangie Haus wohnen, was ein sehr schönes Landgut ist, zum Meer hin. Und an dem einen Abend, wo dann das Tasting war, gab es auch was zu essen. Also es gab sehr viel leckeres Zeug zu essen. Ich habe bei mir im Blog, wird jetzt in den nächsten 2-3 Wochen hoffentlich das Ganze nochmal aufgearbeitet in Bildern. Aber was ganz speziell für mich war, neben dem ganzen tollen Whisky, war das Probieren meines ersten Haggis. Und ich dachte, ja, das ist mein schottisches Nationalgericht, das kann jetzt eigentlich nicht so... Man hört so viel Schlechtes drüber, aber für mich war es wirklich ein Erlebnis, weil es war nicht ein normales Haggis, was vom Lamm ist, sondern es war von Wild. Das war eine Special Edition quasi für den Abend. Und im Grunde geht es darum, dass in den Magen von dem Tier, Lamm oder Wild, einfach dann ein Ragout gefüllt wird von, ja, man fragt nicht, was drin ist. Also es ist viel Innereien, es ist sehr würzig, tolle Geschichte gewesen. Und es wird dort nicht einfach nur gegessen, sondern an dem Abend ist ein Dudelsackspieler durch den Raum gelaufen. Hinter ihm ein Koch, der auf einem Teller mit einer toll gefalteten Serviette zu einem Schiff geformt dieses Haggis hinter den Dudelsackspieler zweimal durch den Raum getragen hat. Dann wurde das vorne am Tischende aufgebahrt. Und dann gab es noch ein kleines Gedicht, was aufgetragen worden ist, wo dann auch Wild mit dem Messer aus dem Strumpf des Dudelsackspielers das Haggis aufgeschnitten worden ist. Total geniale Geschichte. Wurde auch noch ein Toast am Ende auf den Whisky mit Whisky auf das Haggis gegeben. Und ein sehr schönes, kurzes Erlebnis, was ich am Anfang gepackt habe. Danach habe ich ein kleines Interview zu 10 Minuten in Englisch mit Dr. Bill Lunston gehabt, der quasi der Distillery Master ist, der sich um den Geschmack im Whisky kümmert. Also er ist für die Flüssigkeiten zuständig. Und mit ihm habe ich vor allen Dingen darüber gesprochen, den Mix aus Essen und Whisky, was ja immer ein bisschen schwierig ist, weil es ja schon eine sehr harte Spirituose ist. Aber er hatte ein paar schöne Tipps für uns, was man damit machen könnte. Und danach habe ich noch einen Mitschnitt vom Tasting von 1963 gegenüber einem, man kann kaum sagen, normal 18 Jahre alten Glenmorangie, der auch extrem rar ist, ein wunderbarer Whisky. Und da habe ich einfach das komplette Live-Tasting mit ans Ende gepackt. Und ja, ich hoffe, es gefällt euch und dann hören wir mal rein.
Mend the mill in time of need. While through your pores the dews distill, like amber bead. His knife, see rustic labour dicht, and cut you up with any slit, drenching your gushing entrails, bricked as on a ditch, and then o'er a glorious sect, warm, weakened, rich. Then horn for horn they stretch and strive, devil take the hindmost, on they drive, till all the real swealed kites belive are bent like doves. The An organ man is like to arrive. Formidable. Is there that I owe his French ragout? Or, apologies, Oreo? With Stoasu? Or fricassee makers? You are with the Skinner. Looks down with sneering scorn for you and sick of dinner. Poor devil. See him out of his trash as feckless as a withered rash. His spindle shank, a good whiplash. His knee in it. Through bloody flood or field to dash, oh how unfit. But mark the rustic haggis head. The trembling earth resounds his tread. Clapping his Wally Neva blade, and he'll mack and whistle. Then legs and arms and hair will snead like taps of thistle. Ye powers that might mind your care and dish her out her billow fare. Old Scotland wants nae skinking ware that jops and luggies. But if you wish a grateful prayer, gear the haggis. Ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to ask you to join us in a toast to the haggis. Slantema.
Slantema.
Stanch.
Slantema.
So, und nun schalten wir mal rüber in das Interview mit Dr. Bill Lunston. Und dabei wünsche ich euch auch viel Spaß.
So, I sit here with Dr. Bill Lunston from Glenmorangie. So, would you like to say what you do at Glenmorangie? What's your role?
Yeah, my official job title is Director of Distilling, Whiskey Creation and Whiskey Stocks. But basically, in a nutshell, I'm responsible for the liquid that goes into the bottle. So I buy the raw materials, I oversee the production, and I make the cask selection. So if the whiskey in the bottle is not good, it's my fault.
Okay.
That's a simple way of putting it.
Yeah. Okay, you're responsible for the product and you for the recipes.
Yeah.
And you do the...
Correct. And... To develop new products.
Yeah. But it's a long time when you see that a new product launches.
Yeah.
You do it so much.
Oh, yeah. There can be very long lead times. You know, some projects take 20 years to fruition. But the concept of finishing or extra maturation, which we've talked about quite a lot on this trip, Chris, means that using your overall pool of stock, you can take the base whiskey and bring a new product to market in about 2 years.
Okay.
So that's the beauty of that technique.
Yeah. I see that you have so many different cask finishes, and it's a very interesting thing. Maybe you can tell about it a bit.
Yeah, we've done a lot. The concept of finishing was actually first done by a former managing director of the company who I didn't work for, but I've subsequently met and I keep in touch with him, but he did it in a very limited way. And the 63 vintage was the very first. So what I've done is taken that concept and expanded it and refined it and tried all sorts of different products. And we've got a beautiful room in our head office next to my sensory lab, which we call the Snug. And it's a circular room, and round the wall is an archive with bottles of all these different products.
Okay.
So I've used all sorts of different wine barrels, used cognac barrels, and quite a few things are still in the pipeline, and I'm looking at other new product ideas.
And you have all bottles that ever been produced in this room? To
not quite all, but most.
And they're open that you can drink some of it?
No. They are our
to
museum.
See the range.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. And what was so special about the 1963?
Yeah, I think what was so special about that was two things. Firstly, it's extreme rarity, and this is the last chance ever that people will have to try the 63 vintage. There is no more. We have no more whiskey of that age. There are no more bottles. There's that 50. But the other thing that's so special about it, that it's very pioneering in the industry. It was the first time that someone had deliberately made a finish, an extra matured product. And it's a very, very old-fashioned style of Glenmorangie, as you tasted last night, Chris.
Yeah. And the barrels, for the whiskey, you ever use barrels that have been used for something else?
Yeah.
Does nobody come the idea to try it with another than bourbon casks?
Oh, yeah, yeah. We've done it with lots of different things.
But it starts then?
Yeah.
Or was it only the finish was so special?
You mean something that's been wholly matured in a different type?
Yeah.
I mean, some companies will use sherry casks for the full maturation of their product. But personally, I'm not so much in favor of that, because the flavor of the sherry wine dominates over anything else, and it just simply wouldn't work for Glenmorangie.
Yeah.
I've got one or two sherry butts which were filled with new make spirit, but you know, you can't tell it's Glenmorangie. You know, it's whiskey, but
yeah. And you have older whiskies in stock that are older than 63, or was it the oldest you have?
The actual stock profile we have is very confidential, so I don't like to say too much about age of things, but you know, there's hardly any whiskey of that age left. And very few companies have got anything that old.
Okay.
It's all been drunk.
Yeah. It's good.
Yeah.
And a special question from me, because I'm very into food
and wine. Okay.
I want to know, what about whiskey and food?
Yeah, it's a very interesting question, Chris. And it's curious. It's something that really has grown arms and legs over the last 10 years or so. And, you know, I've worked with a number of chefs, including some very eminent ones. I've worked with Pierre Gagnier, 3 Michelin-starred chef from Paris. I've worked with Martin Wishart in Scotland, who's a Michelin star. I worked with a fabulous Spanish chef called Alejandro Sanchez, who used to work at El Bulli on things. I don't think it will ever replace wine as the drink of choice to have with food. But it's an interesting alternative, and you need to give some thought as to the right type of whiskey. You know, for example, our Ardbeg would not be a good match with delicate food like foie gras or shrimp or something, whereas Glenmorangie actually is. It goes very nicely with it.
Yeah, and you would say you can cook with Glenmorangie or whiskey, or is it not so good idea?
You can, but I think if you're cooking with whiskey, you know, you're flashing off all the alcohol. I wouldn't necessarily recommend using an expensive single malt. Yeah. That's the honest answer for you. So it's great to have with it. I'm not so sure about cooking with it.
Yeah, I've tried to make a mousse au chocolat with an Ardbeg.
Right.
And it was lovely if you like the Ardbeg, because it's full of the taste.
Yeah,
the alcohol is in. And but I was wondering if you can get other dishes, maybe main courses or something like that with something smoked, maybe. I don't know if
I think we've had some desserts which have incorporated Signet, for example.
Yeah.
But I say anything in which you're heating the whiskey up with it, you're going to lose a lot of the character of it, in my view.
And what about the mix that you drink whiskey to some dishes?
Yeah.
Also the same, it's the same, or would you say?
I think, again, you should choose it carefully. And, you know, Glenmorangie Original is great with things like shrimp, with scallop, with white fish, with foie gras. Glenmorangie Kintaruban goes very nicely with game, like venison or hare. And, you know, I've had a saddle of venison done in a bitter chocolate sauce, and that went really nicely with Kintaruban. The silliest pairing I ever had was a chef in the States tried to pair Glenmorangie Kintaruban with a salad, and that just didn't work at all. But my favourite ever pairing was, again, Alejandro Sanchez in Spain, and he had made a degustation menu with all of our range, but the best one, it was carpaccio of scallop.
Yeah.
Served with salmon roe, rock salt, and foie gras flavoured ice cream.
Okay.
And he paired it with Glenmorangie Original, and it was just outstanding.
Wonderful, yeah.
But it's not something I would make at home.
Oh, why not? Except of the ice is a little bit special.
Yeah, the foie gras flavoured ice cream would stump me. So yeah, it's a good thing to do. Ardbeg, one of my favourite things to have, Ardbeg 10-year-old, is with good quality fresh Parmigiano Reggiano cheese.
Yeah.
That goes really nicely, yeah.
That's a good idea, yeah.
So you should try that sometime.
I need to. Wonderful. Have you something else? You a passionate cook?
Yeah, you like to cook? I'm not a great cook, but I love cooking.
This is good.
I like dabbling about in the kitchen and trying things.
You have something you want to share with us
about
the kitchen?
Yeah, something that I would share is that, you know, in the kitchen, I like my own space. I don't like my wife interfering and telling me how messy or how slow I am. I like to take my time, and I often will have a tumbler with two or three rocks of ice, Glenmorangie Original, ginger ale, and a fresh squeeze of lime juice. I may have mentioned that last night, and it's just so beautiful.
Okay.
And it's refreshing. You still get the taste of the whiskey. Really good.
If you drink too much, you have a problem in the kitchen, maybe.
It gets a bit chaotic.
Yeah.
I limit myself to six while I'm cooking.
Yeah, wonderful. Yeah, okay, thank you.
Okay, my pleasure, Chris. And just say what a great pleasure it is to be in your company, and I enjoyed the days immensely.
For me too, thank you.
And we didn't kill each other with the driving.
No.
Okay, good.
Nun, zu guter Letzt, geht es in das Tasting zum 1963er. Ist halt im großen Raum aufgenommen worden. Ich hoffe, es gefällt euch.
Well, good evening, ladies and gentlemen. We're tasting the whiskey before dinner this evening, and that was an express request by myself. And the reason for that is not because I would have sat nervously through the dinner worrying about my speech, not at all. It's just I felt that for a product as special as the 63 vintage, that it should be tasted before we've had any other food or wine or anything like that. So that's why we're doing it beforehand. Now, we've got two glasses in front of us here, and you can see very clearly the difference in colour, and I'm intrigued by that. Colour, as I'm sure some of you know, can sometimes be a little bit misleading in terms of whiskies, but sometimes it can depict greater age or give you a clue as to the type of barrel in which it's been matured in. So on the left here is our beautiful aromatic fragrant Glenmorangie 18-year-old, and on the right is the 1963 vintage itself. And we felt it was a good idea to taste the two whiskies this evening because in many respects, the way we make our 18-year-old actually grew out of the experiences all these years ago of the 1963 vintage. So to make this whiskey, the 18, which I know some of us tasted last night, all of the spirit is made from lightly peated Scottish malted barley, a large quantity of which comes within a 100-mile radius of this area, and some of it even comes from the very fields surrounding the house here. These are our own fields where we grow our own Cadball barley, and that provides enough malted barley for Andy to make between 1 and 2 weeks' worth of spirit each year. And we put that to one side for various uses, most of which is still to come. Anyway, the spirit distilled in the tallest copper pot stills of any malt whiskey distillery in Scotland, if not the world, which you will be seeing during the distillery tour tomorrow, produces a highly aromatic, fragrant, but very delicate spirit. It's not an oily spirit at all. So the choice of barrels in which to mature this spirit is absolutely critical. And if we were to do what our friends at Macallan do, for example, and take this delicate spirit and put it straight into Spanish oak sherry casks, without question, the intensity of the European oak and the flavours of the sherry would dominate. So that's not the way we like to do it at Glenmorangie. We like to use American Oak X bourbon barrels. And I'm not going to go into detail about our unique selection process of the bourbon barrels this evening, but you'll be delighted to know I'm going to go into a lot of detail tomorrow about it during the distillery tour. But suffice to say, American oak barrels, less tannin, much softer, sweeter, creamier range of flavours. The first filling of bourbon or Tennessee whiskey gives our cousins in Kentucky and Tennessee what they want for their whiskey, but it means the barrel's just that little bit softer and more gentle for our whiskies, which will typically be aged much longer. Bourbons tend to be between 2 and 4 years. I know that's changing a little bit now. There are some older ones. But anyway, American oak gives lovely soft flavours, which beautifully complement the delicacy of the Glenmorangie spirit. But for 18-year-old, after 15 years, we take a proportion of the whisky. It's not spirit anymore. It's been matured in oak in Scotland for at least 3 years, so we can legally call it whisky. We take about 30% of this 15-year-old whisky and transfer it into the Spanish oak sherry cask for the final 3 years. And that operation is carried out by Andy and his team at the distillery. And then when both elements have reached 18 years, they are blended back together again. And this whisky, which we are now going to taste, is the end result of this. Now, how many of you have read or have had people tell you that the older a whisky is, the better it is? Hands up if you've heard that or been told that. I have to say, I have in the past. And that can be true up to a point. And for single malt scotch, in my opinion, it really needs at least 6 or 7 years in good quality oak before it's ready for drinking. But, you know, if you age it for too long, the wood can start to dominate. It can become a little bit dry, a bit grippy or spicy on the palate. So, you know, I think a lot of whiskies are very good from 10 years onwards. Different distilleries hit their sweet spot at different ages. And at Glenmorangie, for example, our flagship expression is our beautiful original, which is bottled after 10 years in oak. But this is its big brother, the 18-year-old. And what I'm leading up to here is that it's a delicate balance to try and make sure that the oak doesn't overpower. And that's why the raisiny sweetness of the residue of the sherry wine just helps balance out the nuttiness of the oak. So take your lid off your glasses and be prepared to be astonished at the symphony of flavours in this whisky. Gently swirl the liquid. It builds up the bouquet in the neck of the glass and just put your nose over the top and start to inhale. Now, I'm sure you'll be finding some familiar flavours or aromas in there. Maybe a hint of honey or honeysuckle makes me think of lemon blossom, of narcissus, of night-scented jasmine, of mint, of menthol, of leather, of eucalyptus, a hint of walnut. All of these different flavours going on there. But to start off with, it's this beautiful, fragrant floral bouquet. We're going to, I'll explain why we've got this little tool when we come to the 63. I'd really like you to taste this whiskey neat to start off with. But, you know, before we do that, let's keep swirling and let's just build up some more of the aroma in the neck of the glass. You've got lovely citrus fruit flavours in there. It's very perfumed. I often refer to this as the Chanel No. 5 of malt whisky, such as its incredible perfumed bouquet. I was asked to do a little training session about 6 or 7 weeks ago with some of the staff. And the training session comprised Glenmorangie 18-year-old, Glenfiddich 18-year-old, Glenlivet 18-year-old and Macallan 18-year-old. Frankly, my job was easy because it's such a lovely whiskey with such an incredible, sensuous, chewy texture to it. So let's now put this to the test. And ladies and gentlemen, start off by taking a very small sip. and just get your palate used to the pungency of the whiskey. I've been looking forward to this all day. First sip gets your palate accustomed to it, so let's take a second sip, and this time slightly bigger, and hold it in your mouth for a few seconds before swallowing. Now, do you feel the lovely oily viscosity of the whiskey? It's like taking, you know, a spoonful of honey, or honey and menthol, you know, if you've got a sore throat, something to soothe your throat. So you get this lovely, soft, oily texture. Very intense, bittersweet flavours of citrus fruit. Makes me think of orange and lemon breakfast marmalade. You then get some malty or biscuity flavours. If you can imagine dessert or sponge cake or something like that. There's always this thread of the mint or the menthol or the eucalyptus going through it, which is very much a Glenmorangie House character. And for the geeks amongst you, if you are interested, it's caused by a chemical compound called diethyl acetal, which is produced during the maturation process. It's a combination of ethanol and acetaldehyde, and you get oxygen, oh, this is really boring, oxygen free radicals in the wood, and it produces this compound which gives this amazing fragrant top note. So you do tend to find it a lot in older whiskies. Time for a third sip. And then, you know, there are some very familiar Glenmorangie flavours in there. You know, the vanilla, the honey, the almond, things like that. And the aftertaste, again, gives you a hint of some nuts, like walnut or hazelnut. So that is our beautiful, fragrant, fantastic Glenmorangie 18-year-old. Any quick questions about that whiskey before I move on? I'm very mindful, I don't want to upset the chefs. You know how temperamental chefs can be.
Lily. It smells to me different than I've tasted.
Yeah.
It's absolute. I have a different expectation when I smell it and when I have it in my mouth.
To me, that's always the sign of a good whiskey, that what you experience on the bouquet is often different or built upon by the taste. And you get that particularly with our Ardbeg whiskey, the Isla whiskey. When you smell that, you think, yeah, this is quite peaty. And then you taste it and it's an explosion. It just doesn't at all make you ready for the intensity of the flavour. So what you experience in the nose and what you experience in the taste can often be a little bit different. And I'm sure you know, of course, if you hold your nose, there is no taste. You need to have your nasal passages open to experience both aroma and taste. We sometimes have fun doing training sessions where we blindfold people and we chop a small cube of crunchy green apple and a piece of onion. And when you put a nose clip on, people struggle to tell the difference between the two. Anyway, moving swiftly on. 1963 vintage. To the left of Giorgio there is a bottle of the original bottling. So this was bottled back in 1987. There are still one or two bottles kicking about. I know a man who's got at least one or two in his house. But this, you know, this was a very pioneering whiskey. It wasn't actually marketed at the time as a finish, but we are fairly certain that this was the first ever whiskey in Scotland to be subject to a process known as finishing or extra maturation. So you take your mature spirit out of the first barrels, which will typically be American Oak X bourbon barrels, and then transfer it into a different type of cask for a more limited period. So this was all distilled, as Paul said, in 1963, the birth year of Lamborghini. And then after about 22 years, 1985 that is, maths is not my strong point. The whiskey was then transferred into some Oloroso sherry casks for a final 18 months. So the whiskey is almost but not quite 24 years old. And it's quite incredible that even that short period of 18 months and these rich, spicy Oloroso sherry casks has given this incredible... Don't worry, I'll not drop your bottles right here. This incredible depth of flavour, and we're going to find out just how much... Sorry, this depth of colour and just how much flavour it's got in it as well. So this has been bottled at 43% alcohol by volume, the same strength as the 18-year-old. So you can see this lovely, deep mahogany colour, totally natural colour. And once again, if you'd like to lift the lid off your glass. And just swirl. I'll stress the rarity of the whiskey you've got in your glass here. There are only 50 bottles of this globally, so it's in very, very limited supply. Have you drunk yours already, Lily? So maybe that's
so how
why.
How was it? Give us the preview.
Yeah, how was it?
Better than you ever hoped.
You know, Lily, I've tried that trick myself before.
You drink much faster than you drive.
Right. Do we have any other ones, Alice?
There's one that's beyond.
Yes, there is.
Yes,
there is.
Yeah. Now I understand the curious looks you were giving me when I was describing some of the flavours. So it's pungent. It's intense. To start off with, I get the unmistakable aroma of coconut. I get some nice vanilla in there.
Yeah.
Starting to make me think of the classic dried fruits from sherry casks. Plump raisins, sticky dates, some demerara sugar. And there's this lovely perfumed, I don't know if it's mentholic or like pine resin or something like that. Again, something very aromatic, very perfumed. This time, I'd like you to take your little bottles, and you need to be very careful here because too much water or too much ice can sometimes impact on the whiskey. So we're going to just add a few drops. If you can manage 7 drops only. And okay, maybe I'm using a little bit of poetic license here with that. But what I'm trying to say is, don't put too much water in. Just a few drops can often magically transform the liquid and bring out even more of the lovely perfumed bouquet. You know, it's like desiccated coconut, toasted marshmallow, flaked almond, something like that.
Almond,
yeah. You know, maybe even freshly shelled walnuts. And there's that lovely citrus fruit type theme going through it. Just speak amongst yourself.
Billy said his element.
Important to keep your mouths open when you do this, ladies and gentlemen. Get the vapours up the nasal cavity, right round and out through your mouth. Any suggestions? What's anyone else finding in the bouquet?
Almond?
Yep, there's almond. That's of almond marzipan type flavour. You know, like amaretto biscotti?
Yeah,
there's something ever so slightly liqueur-like. There's a viscosity, a density to this whiskey. So, at long last, if you haven't already done so, please take a sip.
Mm.
We didn't need to start off with a small sip there because we've already had the first whiskey. So the flavour's incredible. Peaches, pineapples, orange and grapefruit breakfast marmalade. Lots of nice spices in there. Nutmeg, cinnamon, ginger. Again, all these classic Oloroso sherry notes. Maybe a bit of clove. And there's this nice sensation of antique leather. You know, if you've got a leather-bound book, something like that. That's what this is making me think of. But again, there's this lovely sweetness of the brown sugar, the molasses, the treacle, these sherry notes. Try again. It's just got this beautiful softness and mellowness. It's very, very rich. It's powerful. It's intense. But, you know, it's not grippy. It's not fiery in any way. There's a mellowness to it. It really is, gives you this sensation of antiquity or age. And I'm really getting all the shelled walnuts, the leather notes, the saddle soap. And again, on the aftertaste, it takes you back to a little bit of classic Glenmorangie territory, a bit of vanilla, a bit of honeycomb. Two sips down, probably two to go.
You tried it before.
This time I'm thinking dark chocolate, I'm thinking ginger, I'm thinking tobacco, aromatic tobacco or cedar wood or something like that. And then there's the minty or mentholic, almost like it's cooling on the palate. So it's always intriguing with malt whiskey how each time you sip it, as you go down the glass, down through the layers, it brings out all of these different flavours each time. Maybe two sips to go in the last time. It's almost like you find the deeper basal flavours, and if you can imagine old-fashioned boiled sweets, the sort of things we enjoy eating in the UK and spoiling our teeth, like cinnamon balls, like mint humbugs, like aniseed twists, there's almost slightly medicinal flavours going on in there now. And I'm loving the fact that with each sip I'm finding something different. At this stage, if I was somewhere where I was allowed to do so, I would probably be warming up my Monte Cristo number 4 cigar to have with this. Quite a mild cigar. Monte Cristos are quite mild and creamy. And, you know, I would leave it to the end. I would want to try and find some of the flavours first. But this has the depth, it has the richness, it has the intensity to have with some nice coffee or a nice cigar. So, ladies and gentlemen, sadly, I'm certainly down to my last drop here. I trust you'd enjoyed tasting this rather unique whisky. I'm curious to know, Giorgio, after tasting it, if you're thinking now you might just open the bottle as soon as you get back to Italia. Any questions, thoughts or comments on the whisky?
Yes, Bill. Yeah. Like for the 18 and this one, will the taste, the flavour changes significantly if you add ice on it?
To be honest, for this one in particular, David, I wouldn't recommend adding ice to it because there's a lot of wood in there. There's a hint of the grippy tannin, and I think you would lose the sweetness and it would bring out some of the sappiness of the oak. So yes is the answer to that. You know, you probably saw me last night with my glass of 18-year-old I had. I did put one ice cube in it, and it's okay with that. But for something as old and as special as this, I would say probably don't put ice. or Coca-Cola or green tea or anything like that.
Right. So for this,
yeah.
Americans
yeah.
would
do so.
1963,
maybe yeah. just hey. A few drops of water.
Americans
yeah.
would do
so.
Yeah. Yeah. They put yeah. some Coke on the ice.
Yeah. I said, hey. I hear you. I'm the only one in the room.
Yeah. Yeah. There's only two things I would put in that glass, and that's this or this. But I wouldn't put anything else in it. Okay, well, very ladies good. And gentlemen,
Paul, shall we dine?
Yeah, yeah. But thank you all very much for coming. I'm sure you are continuing to have a fabulous time.
Yeah, that's a good riff, isn't it? It's a great riff, that.